Most listeners will have recognized that music as coming from the Nutcracker, a ballet with music by Peter Tchaikovsky, and that one of those pieces that shows up in the familiar Nutcracker Suite, which is a bunch of tunes that comes out of the full ballet. This performance was given by the Montreal Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Charles Dutoit, and the complete ballet will be given by the Champaign-Urbana Ballet with Sinfonia da Camera in the orchestra pit at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, starting this Friday and continuing through Sunday, December the 9th. It's an annual event, and it's become quite a large one, and of course one that is much anticipated by many in our listening area. We will be talking with two representatives of Champaign-Urbana Ballet, including their artistic director, in a matter of moments. Then later on the program, I'll be talking with one of the two trumpet players of Boston Brass, Jeff Connor, who's also the founding member of the group. They're going to be at Sangamon Auditorium at the University of Illinois at Springfield for a Christmas program that's called Christmas Bells Are Swingin'. It'll feature Boston Brass and the Brass All-Star Big Band Sunday night at 7 o'clock. So we'll have that conversation coming up as well. This is Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly. Thanks very much for joining us for the program. Deanna Doty is the founding artistic director of Champaign-Urbana Ballet. Tracy McCabe is the producer of their shows and has been involved in many different aspects of the company and of the productions, including even on occasion doing some dancing. They're both with me on the program today. Thanks, Deanna and Tracy, for joining us on the show.
Hi, Kevin.
The Nutcracker is, of course, well, probably everybody knows what the Nutcracker is. And I would almost guess that just about everybody in Champaign-Urbana has seen one of your productions at some point. Probably that isn't true because, of course, some people just don't go out to see it and some people don't know about it, but an awful lot of people have. So every year you do some things that are a little new and a little different.
Right.
So I've read the article in the News Gazette, so I have some idea. But for those who didn't read it, give us an idea of what's new this year, what's going to be.
Yeah, well, we always have new dancers. They're new because they are ever-changing, and our cast is ever-growing and ever-evolving. A dancer that you might have seen last year is this year a year older and a year better and hopefully a year wiser. And so that is always exciting to see the growth of the dancers from year to year. We have several new sets of costumes. We did a big new Waltz of the Flowers this year, so that should be very beautiful and exciting to see that as well as Party Dads, some new costumes in the party scene.
So when you say you did a big new Waltz of the Flowers,
yes,
what does that mean? You've changed the choreography?
Choreographically, it's very similar, although there are always slight changes from year to year. Sometimes we do it as a pas de deux, and sometimes it's just a solo for a female and two other girls, along with the corps de ballet, which always stays the same. But this year we redid the flower skirts, which is very labor intensive. We actually spent the past year collecting materials and developing patterns and experimenting with things. And so we've come up with this new skirt, which hopefully looks very much like a flower. It has millions and millions of pleats in it, which took us all summer long. And so that's what it means to kind of redo costume-wise, redo something.
Who are your costumers?
We have many of them. It is a volunteer organization. I design many of the costumes myself, although others do design them as well. We have the benefit of great expertise in some of our volunteers, one of whom is Ann DeVelder and her husband John Dagar, who help us an extraordinary amount and serve sort of as teachers for me personally, to help me understand the way things should work.
And in addition to our costume mistress, Masumi Irie. We have a team of other volunteers who, some of our parents of dancers are involved. You know, sewing is a lost art, but fortunately it's alive and well in the ballet world. But we have to really give credit to Deanna too. She pleated all of those millions of pleats over the summer. So it's a collective effort. I mean, Deanna has an artistic vision for a costume, but of course, when you need to make 14 or 15 of them, it takes a village. And so we fortunately have a village of very dedicated costumers who do beautiful work.
Deanna, when you started out doing ballet and then choreography and then starting your own company and so on, did you ever imagine that as artistic director, you would also have to envision costumes and also have to envision scenery, although you have, of course, important collaborators with that?
Honestly, no. I mean, that's never something that crossed my mind. It really came one tiny step at a time, and it's always grown from the dancers themselves and from what they needed and from the next step that they needed to take. So we never came at it from the top down where we thought, oh, we want to build a company and we want to have these fabulous sets and have these fabulous costumes and this space and go to Cranard and do all these things. We never thought that way. It always grew organically from the next step that we thought we could take and the next step that we thought we should take to give the children the opportunity and to enhance our performances and so to be able to give back to the community in that way.
And, of course, this is, what, your 12th production?
Believe it or not, we're beyond that. This is our 10th year at Cranard. This is our 14th Nutcracker.
In some form.
In some form, absolutely.
Yes. Early forms were shortened.
Yes.
But you're now doing have been for a long time doing the whole thing. You mentioned that dancers come and go because it is a young company. So
yes.
Often when they go, they're literally leaving. They've gone away. Some of them become dancers in other companies. Some of them just say they're done dancing.
Yeah,
absolutely. And so that's a lot of the turnover,
yes,
so to speak. So the ballet company rejuvenates itself in that way. What do you have to do for yourself as Deanna Doty to rejuvenate the Nutcracker? You know, that what keeps you doing this production every year?
Right. I do have to keep it interesting to myself. Otherwise, the ballet becomes stale, not just to me, but to everyone. And so to that point, that is why we continually rejuvenate and we continually redesign the costumes, or there's always some new element and some new choreography and some new opportunity, because maybe you have a set of dancers who can do something that you weren't able to do the year before. For instance, we have a very interesting turn of events for our Arabian dance this year, and maybe Tracy can speak to that a little bit.
Well, it's interesting that, you know, we've grown to a point where it used to be that auditions, we were just thankful that anybody showed up. And so now we've been able to reach out into the community. And, for example, in this Arabian dance, we have the four trainers from Connect Studios in Urbana who are going to be part of our Arabian variation and carry out the Arabian princess in a really interesting way. But
so what kind of studio is that?
It's a fitness studio, and these are the best built guys you've ever seen
in
your life.
Oh, that kind of studio. All right.
So come see them.
Right. But they add this interesting element. So they've also come with great professionalism, and that's something that is really rewarding, that they see the type of environment Deanna has created for these dancers and that we have as a ballet company. And other people respond to that very positively. So it's having those types of people come in as well and bring their own perspective on it that makes it interesting from year to year for me.
So whose idea was that one?
Well, that was actually proposed by a cast member. And I responded positively to it because there is this wonderful version of the Royal Ballet's Arabian with this amazing entrance they do with the Arabian princess that we wanted to mimic, and we've taken even that to the next level, I think, in this production.
Well, here is the well-known Arabian dance, also known as the coffee dance. This comes from the portion of the ballet that does show up in the Nutcracker Suite. So all of these dances from what is known as the divertissement, or just the little entertainment part, where Clara, the main character, is just sitting and watching these things going on. There's the chocolate dance, there's the tea dance, and so on. And in between those two is the coffee dance. And so you'll have to imagine these muscle guys carrying people around on this. And it probably won't match the real picture. So in other words, you'll need to go see the show. That's the Arabian dance, or the coffee dance. Same thing from The Nutcracker, music by Tchaikovsky. Choreography in Champaign-Urbana Ballet's production by Deanna Doty, who was their artistic director. She is with me on the show today, along with Tracy McCabe, producer of the production. As we were listening to that, Deanna was saying, this is long. It's a long variation. I'm thinking it's only 3 minutes long. But then you said, well, for a dance, it can be long. And is that because of all of the elements of the choreography, or is that because you're imagining what the dancers are doing at that moment, you know, standing up on their toes or whatever you have them doing?
I think you would need to ask the original choreographer why he wanted that dance so long.
And so this was not you?
No, this is a very old ballet. And so when it was originally choreographed, the choreography came first and then the music came afterwards. I believe it was Petipa or maybe Ivanov who choreographed it. And then he would go to Tchaikovsky and say, this needs to be, you know, this many phrases long, and I need this section to sound like this and the next section to be fast and the next section to be slower, and it should have this. So it's very interesting. They don't do it that way nowadays mostly, but choreography came first and then the music.
And we had a lighting designer once who said that Petipa must have really liked the girl who was dancing the Arabian variation to make it that long and to put her on stage that long in the act.
Because the rest of them are only about a minute or so.
Yeah, they're quite short.
At least in that particular section. I didn't know that, though. Is this particular to the Nutcracker? Is this particular to Tchaikovsky ballets?
To the time period. And to that, I believe that was just the way they did it way back when.
Yeah, and Tchaikovsky, for example, would sneak in his own stuff, right? They rapidly developed a lot of these ballets, you know. This music wasn't necessarily written over years, but instead over months or even weeks before it was presented. And so, obviously, Tchaikovsky worked well under pressure.
Well, he would have had to. Deanna, have you made any attempt during this your development of this production to either imitate, borrow, or reuse other people's choreography?
Absolutely. I mean, you're always influenced by what's come before. And so there are many elements that go into this. I think everything for me revolves around the grand pas, which has very traditional choreography. The variation that the Sugar Plum Fairy does, you can oftentimes go anywhere in the world, and the Sugar Plum Fairy variation will be very similar. It's all, I believe, kind of based off of the same one, although more and more people are doing, you know, their own version. But I try to stay very traditional with the Grand Pas de Deux and the Cavalier and Sugar Plum variation. That needs to be done, you know, technically correctly, and there's great culture and history behind that. There are other elements as well. The Waltz of the Flowers, you asked about that choreography. That choreography is directly influenced from my teacher, Harvey Heisel. That choreography comes very much from his version. I've altered it to fit us, but it gives me great pleasure every time I see the choreography because it makes me think of him. He's no longer with us, but it brings back memories. There are other elements as well. The Lemonade Sea is influenced by my director in Lexington Ballet, which was Carl Kaufman. He did a version of the Lemonade Sea that I always just loved and thought it was so beautiful. So essentially what it comes down to is I've tried to take the best of what I experienced as a dancer and what I experienced growing up and to try to fit it all together and then to try to knit these pieces together in a way that will suit us and who we are and what we do.
And I imagine then from year to year, according to who, absolutely, what dancer you've got, you may have to,
yes,
make some modification, either because of limitations or because of particular skill.
Yes, yes.
How about your, since you mentioned the Sugar Plum Fairy, how's she this year? What did you have to do
Wonderful.
For her?
We have two this year. It's double cast. One of the dancers did it last year, and so she has maturity and experience behind her. And the second dancer is new to it, so she brings her own special excitement as her first year doing Sugar Plum. They're both completely different types of dancers, so everyone should come and see both of them because they're both special in their own
way.
So
in that case, do they do exactly the same choreography?
No, they don't. And that is interesting as well. One of them is very tall and long, and it takes her a little longer to do things, and she has beautiful lines and extension, and so certain things are done in a way to accentuate that, while the other girl is very tiny and quick and light and sprightly, and so we make those adjustments. She's also a fantastic turner, so we've kind of put in some extra turns for her just to showcase her technical ability.
Well, people will have to use their imagination right now because can't see the dancer, but this is at least how the Montreal Symphony, led by Charles Dutoit, interpreted the music part of the Sugar Plum Fairy from the Nutcracker, which is going to be presented by Champaign-Urbana Ballet and Symphonie de Camera starting Friday at the Kranitz Center for the Performing Arts. So that's just a teaser of the Sugar Plum Fairy variation from the Grand Pas de Deux that features that character and the prince or the cavalier. And who are the names, by the way, of those two dancers you mentioned?
Maura Dixon is our Sugar Plum, who has been... this is her second year doing it. And Arisa Nakamura is the additional Sugar Plum that we have this year.
So is the new one the tall one, or is
the new one is the tiny one.
The new one is the tiny one. Well, it'll be fun. You know, and of course, people are welcome to go more than once. There are lots of performances of this. Friday, November 30th, it opens, 7:30. And then there's evening performances on Saturday the 1st and Saturday the 8th. Afternoon performances at 2 o'clock on Saturday the 1st, Sunday the 2nd, Saturday the 8th, and Sunday the 9th. Are they all still open as far as you know?
They are. I think the best tickets are on this opening night. We'd love to have people come out this weekend, and there will surely be tickets left for next weekend. But word of mouth with the Nutcracker is very strong. So we encourage people to join us as soon as possible.
I mentioned reading the article in the News Gazette about this year's production, and they mentioned specifically and had a picture of these, let's say, older than high school age gentlemen who were going to be dancing the Russian dance. Now, that's something that's new isn't it?
Well, it's interesting. We've added it back. Last year, we did not perform the Russian variation because the lead dancer was unable to perform. And so we took it out of the ballet. It was the right decision. But of course, it is the most familiar music for many from the ballet. It's what you hear in the department store. And
it's just about the shortest bit in the whole ballet,
yes,
too.
Yes, and it's 56 seconds long, and you hear it on commercials on TV all day long. And so it was certainly missed, but it was especially missed by those male dancers who wanted that opportunity to get out there and jump and leap and yell and do all the things they do in that. So we brought it back, especially for them, but also for our audience. And it's one of those really fun moments in Nutcracker. There's lots of moments to wake you up, but this one in particular, you can just tell the orchestra gets into it, the guys on stage get into it, and we have a set of dancers as well who are partnering in it. So there's lots of people on stage and lots to look at. It's great.
Champagne and Banna Ballet's production of The Nutcracker opens Friday. They are partnering with the Sinfonia da Camera, conducted by Ian Hobson, and, of course, the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts on the University of Illinois campus in Urbana. You can go to the Krannert Center website for information on tickets. It's krannertcenter.com. For information on Champagne and Banna Ballet, it's cuballet.com.
That's it.
Right. And Tracy McCabe, producer of the show, and Deanna Doty, who is artistic director of the ballet company and CU Ballet Academy, have been my guests on this portion of Live and Local on FM 90.9. Thanks very much to you both.
Thanks Kevin.
You're listening to Live and Local on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly. Our program is made possible today with support from the Courier Cafe, serving breakfast, lunch, and dinner every day, whether it's almond French toast for breakfast, garden fresh salads and homemade soups for lunch, or burgers and hand-dipped shakes for dinner. The Courier Cafe in downtown Urbana has been offering fresh choices for 30 years. Thank you. That was an arrangement by Stan Kenton of the Christmas carol Good King Wenceslas, as you probably recognize, at least the Good King Wenceslas part. Performance by Boston Brass with the Brass All-Star Big Band. It's from their album called the Stan Kenton Christmas Carols. And the Boston Brass and a subset of the All-Star Big Band will be playing a bunch of the Kenton Christmas Carols on Sunday night at 7 o'clock at Sangamon Auditorium at the University of Illinois at Springfield on their Visiting Artists series. Boston Brass, the core of this group, are a quintet of brass players, including a trumpet player, Jeff Connor, who is with me on the phone. Thanks very much for joining us on the show.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me, Kevin.
You celebrated your 25th anniversary as a group last year, was it, 2011?
We did, yes. And I've been with the band since the beginning. I'm the old man of the group.
Well, that was going to be my next question.
We're going into our 26th
year. Yeah, congratulations.
Thank you.
So what was, when I hear something like Boston Brass or Chicago Brass or wherever, I just automatically make an assumption that there might be a connection with the local symphony. But I really haven't looked to see whether there is any for you guys. Where do you all come
actually,
from?
Actually, there's not. The group started in Boston. I was a student at Boston University, and that's where the group started. We all lived in the Boston area at the time, you know, the original members. And we've, you know, since branching out, everybody, now it's a road gig, so everybody pretty much lives wherever they want. They just need to get to an airport. So one of the guys, Jose, lives, the other trumpet player, Jose Sabaja, lives in Miami. Lance LaDuke, our trombone player, lives in Pittsburgh. Our horn player, Chris Castellanos, lives in Las Vegas. And Andrew Hitz, our tuba player, lives in Washington, D.C.
I'm not sure you could be more spread out than that.
Yeah, it's pretty spread out.
Short of
being... But we're on the road about 160, 170 days every year, so we see each other a lot.
So what do you do when you're not doing Boston Brass gigs?
Boston Brass. Pretty much run the day-to-day operations, you know, all the scheduling, working with our management and our instrument company, and just making sure we're out on the road working.
And the other guys have other playing gigs as well?
Some of the guys do some other things. Lance and Andrew teach at different colleges. Andrew's at Gettysburg College and George Mason. Lance is at Carnegie Mellon and Kane. They're adjunct faculty there. Chris does a lot of freelancing in the Las Vegas area, right in Las Vegas. He actually just finished, I don't know how many years, I think about 1,600 or 1,800 performances of Phantom of the Opera
in
Las Vegas. And Jose does a lot of studio work down in Miami.
He better love that show, Phantom.
Yeah.
I guess.
And I don't think he's seen it once. He played 1,800 times and never seen it.
That's the problem about playing in a pit, isn't it?
Yeah.
You must do some other playing. You know, what's been some of
a little bit.
Your
pretty
own
much
background?
Quintet keeps me busy. That's, you know, pretty much, you know, that all I do. That definitely keeps me motivated and keeps the fire going.
When you started at Boston University, did you set out to be a quintet musician, or did that quickly become a goal at some point?
I did early on. We were extremely fortunate back in the mid-80s to have the Empire Brass as they were artists in residence at Boston University. So they were our teachers and great mentors, coaches, but we also, you know, knew that, you know, chamber music, playing in a brass quintet, could be a viable living. So they taught us also the business part of music, which is vital today.
Empire Brass has had a lot of iterations, with the exception of Rolf Smedvig, who I guess has been around the whole time.
It was just, you know, an amazing group. We were so fortunate to have them as our teachers and coaches. And, you know, back at that time, a lot of groups, you know, a lot of successful brass quintets formed and had really successful careers because of them.
Just out of curiosity, who were the other guys at the time? I've actually met two of them.
Empire, back in the mid-80s, it was, Sam was playing, Sam Palafian, Eric Rusk, Scott Hartman, Jeff Kernow played for a while, Tim Morrison was there, playing with him for a bit. So it was just an incredible group.
So you hit the two guys that I have met. I was at Northwestern at the same time Eric Rusk was.
Oh, really?
And Jeff Kernow, actually, when I was a senior in high school, I went to this National High School Honors Band in Chicago, and he was one of my roommates. In fact, I remember him not only for some of his bad jokes, but also for his, what was then a really annoying habit of buzzing constantly without his mouthpiece. It was annoying because he did it all the time, but it was also annoying because it was so impressive that you could do that and not, you know, that sort of took all the pressure off your lips.
And anyway, it worked out good for him.
Yeah. So enough about those guys.
Amazing players.
Yeah. Let's hear something that is not one of your Christmas tunes.
Okay.
This is a melody I'm sure many people will find familiar. It's by Ernesto Lecuona, his famous Malagueña. Which of your albums does this come off of? Do you know offhand?
This is an album we recorded a couple years ago called Latin Nights. And actually, Sam Palavian was the producer for this album. And it's a, kind of a mix of classical and jazz Latin music. And we brought in a lot of guest artists for this album. So we have some percussion on this arrangement of Malagueña.
It's Boston Brass, one of whose members is my guest on this portion of Live and Local, trumpet player Jeff Connor. And you're listening to 90.9.
Thank you.
Malagueña, the name of that tune, with Boston Brass and a number of guests. My guest on the show today is Jeff Connor, who plays trumpet in the quintet. You indicated, of course, there's some non-Boston Brass members on that recording, and of course your performance at Sangamon Auditorium will have this all-star big band. And your bio indicates quite a number of other collaborations. Is that a particular specialty of Boston Brass, sort of to fit in chameleon-like with lots of different types of groups?
Well, over the past couple of years, we've really been fortunate to collaborate with some great guest artists and just amazing ensembles. We kind of did that kind of in celebration of our 25th anniversary. Kind of the first big collaboration was actually this recording we did of the Stan Kenton carols. We just decided we loved those arrangements, you know, the Ralph Carmichael arrangements from that Kenton band. And they hadn't been re-recorded in years. So we got just a whole bunch of our friends from the brass world, from, you know, former members of Canadian Brass, Empire Brass, Dallas Brass, to come and re-record them. And then most recently, we collaborated with a woodwind quintet out of New York City, the Imani Winds. And we developed a program that was based on the music of Miles Davis and Gil Evans. We've designed a program on the Porgy and Bess and Sketches of Spain Suites. And then our most recent collaboration is with the Enzo String Quartet in a program called Notes from the Balcony. And it's music all based on Romeo and Juliet. So we do the Bernstein Symphonic Dance Suite from West Side Story and the Prokofiev Romeo and Juliet. And we add a couple percussionists and piano. So we're in the process of touring that this year, as well as with the all three collaborations, you know, with the big band, with the Imani Winds, and with the string quartet.
So the collaborative efforts are really kind of a newish thing.
They are, and it's very exciting, and it just, you know, kind of gives us the opportunity to stretch our musical muscles, if you will. It's just another outlet, because, you know, most of the things we do are just solo performances. So doing these collaborations are always a lot of fun.
Is it a challenge to find arrangements for those combinations, or do you have to do all your own?
They're all custom made. All the arrangements for Notes from the Balcony with the strings, those were all, you know, we had someone do those arrangements. The collaboration with Imani Winds, Chris Castellanos, a horn player, did all the arrangements of Porgy and Bess. And then two of the members from Imani Winds, Jeff and Valerie, did the Sketches of Spain and the Will of the Wisp and some of the other tunes from that album.
I'd really like to get a chance to hear that when I haven't run across it yet.
It's great music. I mean, it's just so evocative, that music. It's really cool to listen to.
Yeah. Let me know if you ever bring that tour around.
Absolutely.
That would be a lot of fun to get to hear. We are talking with Jeff Connor of Boston Brass in advance of their performance this coming Sunday of the Stan Kenton Christmas Carol book called Christmas Bells Are Swinging. It's going to be at Sangamon Auditorium at the University of Illinois at Springfield Sunday night at 7 o'clock, along with the Brass All-Star Big Band. I mentioned at the outset that this is sort of a subset of the really big band.
Yes, the recording, we did the original instrumentation. We had, it was about 20 or so pieces. Now we'll have a 14-piece big band on the concert on Sunday, just with the economy.
Is that so?
So we kind of redesigned the book to, you know, to make it 4:14. You won't miss a thing. Everything's covered, and it's just, we have some great players and great friends coming out with us. It's just the show is something we look forward to every single year. It's one of the most favorite things we get to do.
Is that 14 plus year five, or counting
14
your five?
Total?
Counting your five. That's a lot of brass, which is always an exciting sound.
We put out a big sound.
Well, let's hear an example of that, actually. When I saw that one of the options for me to play was Oh Holy Night, I have to admit I always think that's kind of a cheesy tune, but boy, do you make a grand sound on this one. It's a wonderful arrangement and fantastic sound.
Thank you.
From the Stan Kenton Christmas Carols album by Boston Brass, here they are on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Thank you. That's an arrangement of the familiar carol, O Holy Night. That one, so Ralph Carmichael, you said, was the one who arranged all those for the Kenton Band?
Yes.
And was he one of the players in the band as well?
He was one of the chief arrangers for the Kenton Band, and they're just, you know, just gave it that signature Kenton sound, and they're just they're fantastic carols. Along with, we're going to do a bunch of the carols from the album, but also we've had over the past couple of years we've had some new arrangements brought into to the concert that we're going to be playing, and then the Boston Brass has a couple solo sets that we're going to play some fun holiday tunes, and then some of the guys we bring in, we give them a chance to play, so they're going to be hearing some solos there. And then you're going to even be hearing some pretty unique Christmas songs from our trombone player, Lance. He has some really great carols, or not carols, but Christmas songs that he wrote, so that are a lot of fun.
I read in your biographical material that there's a certain amount of, let's call it, conversation with the audience that goes on in your presentations.
We have a good time. I mean, it's all, that's what it's all about. You know, they're going to hear lots of music, and there's something for everyone there, you know, and you're going to hear just a lot of unique combinations of instruments, and there'll be some singing and just overall fun.
I meant to ask, in the arrangements I've heard so far, I don't think I'm hearing it, but are there some areas in these Kenton arrangements that are a chance to open up and do any sort of improvisation from any of the players?
Not really. No, there's not. In some of the other tunes that some new arrangements for the big band, there are. We do. We close a program with a great arrangement our former horn player did, J.D. Shaw, of Greensleeves. So that gives some of the guys a chance to play some jazz. And then another piece that we had that we play is called Faithful, by our piano player David Cutler, and there's some opportunities for guys to play some jazz in there.
So does that imply that at least some of the players either come from jazz or have a jazz background?
Yes. Mm-hmm. We have some incredible jazz players. Let's see, one of the trumpet players is Joey Tartell, who is actually the trumpet professor at Indiana University, and he played with Maynard Ferguson for a number of years. We have Harry Waters, who is one of the top jazz trombone players, you know, in the States, if not the world, from D.C. He's coming out and playing with us. And so just some, you know, amazing musicians that are going to be, you know, that we get a chance to play with.
Tell me a little bit about, before I let you go, about your participation in the Save the Music program.
A few years ago, we got involved with that when we were with a different instrument company, and it's just, you know, something we have always been very passionate about. It's very important to us, music education is. The reason I'm still playing today is because of my middle school and high school band directors. I think for all of us, all of us in the band, you know, we're playing, we had great music directors, you know, band directors, whether it be private teachers or our band, middle school, jazz band, whatever it might be. So it's really important to us. And we're with a different company now with Jupiter Band Instruments, and just they're just so committed to music education, and it's just it's incredible. So we have the privilege of going out and playing for just lots of students all over the, not just the country, but all over the world, you know, with their support. And it's just vital, you know, keeping music education in the schools and alive and keeping kids playing music. The opportunities that they have, you know, is incredible. I mean, music is something that you're able to do your entire life. So it's, you know, we really feel strongly about it, and it's just a pleasure. Anything we can do with music education is just a privilege for us.
So Save the Music helps to put instruments in
some instruments
schools.
Into schools that may not, that don't have the budget or aren't able to afford instruments. So it's an incredible program, you know, that that they do, you know, and the things that they support.
Well, I want to go out with another non-Christmas tune, and I'm guessing this is also from your Latin Nights, this Jobim tune called Wave.
Yes. We have a wonderful singer. Her name's Talita Real. She lives in Miami, and a friend of Jose's, and it just, it's great. It's my favorite track on the album.
Oh, well, I'm glad we managed to get this one. Yeah. I really have enjoyed listening to it. And I've enjoyed talking to you very much.
Well, thank you so much, Kevin. It's been a pleasure.
Sure. Jeff Connor is one of the two trumpet players of Boston Brass, along with Jose Cibaja, horn player Chris Castellanos, trombonist Lance LeDuc, and tubist Andrew Hitz. They will all be at Sangamon Auditorium at the University of Illinois Springfield Sunday night for a concert at 7 o'clock. Boston Brass and the Brass All-Star Big Band, Stan Kenton Christmas Tunes, Christmas Bells Are Swinging, and a lot of other stuff as well that sounds like some great variety on that program. You can get more information by going to sangamonauditorium.org, and you can get more information on Boston Brass by going to bostonbrass.com. Jeff, thanks very much for joining us on Live and Local.
Thank you so much for having me, Kevin. Hope to see everybody out there on Sunday night.
Os olhos já não podem ver coisas que só o coração pode entender. Fundamental é mesmo o amor, é impossível ser feliz sozinho. O resto é mar, é tudo que nem sei contar. São coisas lindas que eu tenho. Ser feliz sozinho. Agora eu já sei da onda que se ergueu no mar.
Boston Brass and music by Antonio Carlos Jobim with vocalist Talita Real here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly. Our broadcast today is made possible with support from the Sousa Archives and Center for American Music, preserving our nation's musical heritage at the University of Illinois, now featuring new exhibits entitled America's Musical Past, Shenanigans, Hootenannies, and Other Twisted Adventures. More information is available at sousaarchives.org. Besides the Boston Brass concert on Sunday, here are some other events you can see and hear live in our listening area over the next couple of days. Illinois College has a music department recital. That's actually going on this hour, so never mind about that. Johannes Brahms' instrumental music is being featured in a series featuring pianist Ian Hobson at the University of Illinois. The next one is, in fact, tonight at 7:30 in Smith Music Hall on the University of Illinois campus in Urbana. Gloria Rubel and Paul Sabuco are at Clark Bar in Champaign this evening at 6:30. It's the Illinois State University Music Factory. Not sure what that is, but that's at Kemp Recital Hall on the ISU campus in Normal tonight at 8 o'clock. Eastern Illinois University's Jazz Combos are at the Dowden Fine Arts Center in Charleston tomorrow night at 7:30. The ISU Bass Ensemble is at Cook Hall on the campus in Normal tomorrow night at 8 o'clock. UI Jazz Vocalists, University of Illinois Jazz Vocalists, are at the Iron Post in Urbana tomorrow evening at 7 o'clock. And the Black Lilies from Tennessee are at the Rose Bowl Tavern in Urbana tomorrow at 7:30, and they are going to be playing for us live on Live and Local on tomorrow's show. Hope you can join us for that during the 4 o'clock hour. You're listening to 90.9 WYLL FM and HD Urbana with Translator W293 AF Danville, NPR Classical Music, and more for Central Illinois. WYLL is a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois. Quick look at our weather forecast. We do expect a mostly clear sky tonight. The low temperature will be around 28 degrees. Tomorrow will be mostly sunny with a high of 50. That should be a nice welcome warm-up. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy, the low 35, and then slightly warmer still on Friday. Under a partly sunny sky, we'll have a high temperature of 52 degrees. We're currently at 43 degrees. Stay tuned next for All Things Considered from NPR. For Live and Local, I'm Kevin Kelly. Thanks for listening.